there is a status from Linda Jo. And the status on there talking about performers at Lacage and what's so great about Lacage and blah, 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 blah. And there's so many people ranting and raving on the status that it's kind of sickening, in all honesty.
You're listening to Too Soon Podcast.
What's up, everyone? My name is Linda Jo. I am loud, sometimes aggressive, and I do live for the drama. You can call me Linda Sojourner Truth or Linda Controversy Ho if you're nasty. And that's on Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Hey, it's your girl Malaya Marvel, Wisconsin's favorite drag superhero. And I am extra excited for this episode because we are going to get super nerdy and dirty with one of my favorite cosplayers in the world. And we're going to have tons of topics to tittle your fancy when it comes to anime and pop culture.
What's up, everybody? This week on Too Soon, we're going to be talking about Senator Ron Johnson.
Also going to be touching on some topics involving fraudulent university student loans and Biden's approach to them.
There's a new show on HBO called Generation, and it is actually pretty good. The finale of Pose.
Yes, I'm so sad. Pose is ending, so we have to touch on that.
We definitely do.
I don't want to cry about it.
And then we'll talk to Ronnie Bunny about a bunch of cool stuff.
Yeah, Ronnie Bunny is going to be sickening. We have a lot of cosplay topics to get through because she is one of the goats.
Yeah, she's fucking amazing.
All right. Hey, it's your girl, Malaya Marvel. And we're starting off with Too Soon. Mm-hmm. And one of our lovely contestants from season 13 of Drag Race has confirmed what we've all been thinking.
Contestants?
I can't talk. Leave me alone. Okay, let's try it again. I hate you. Leave me alone. I have a lisp sometimes. Let's start again.
Okay.
So for this week's episode, do we think it's too soon to discuss the rigor mortis that happens in Drag Race? Recently, we had season 13 contestant Tamisha Iman come out about her experience on Drag Race and how she felt certain things that happened with production and with other queens set her up for failure. She talked about the fact that certain contestants get favored and also that production takes a look at their entire wardrobe before they even start the competition. So I just wanted to get your insight on how you feel about, you know, the rigor mortis in Drag Race.
I mean, well, we kind of all knew this already. So, I mean, like, I think for fans of the show, it does add fuel to the flames. And I'm not going to say, what I won't say is the show is rigged. I don't think that it is rigged. I think that it is produced. I think they don't make all the decisions in advance, but they do have an idea of how they want the story to play out and they build as they go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have a lot to work with and post-production to kind of like create the narrative that they want. You know what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if Rue and Michelle, they're not looking at these looks in advance, or if they looked at them when they did send in the looks, they may not have fully remembered the looks, like, you know, I don't know.
I think in her mind, if she's thinking the way I would be thinking, they're trying to set up some kind of narrative because they're going to storyboard. They're going to take every look and they're going to decide, okay, we can send this person home and it'll be okay with the fan base because we know they're not going to have that strong of a look. And we also know based on what challenge we're going to put them in, they might not perform the best in that challenge. And I think that was part of what she was trying to say. She did clarify that, you know, she's under contract. She can't talk about a lot of things yet, but I am so here for when she actually does talk about everything.
She said, if that contract is over at 12:01, baby, at 12:02, she going live.
Exactly. Hey, I'm going to be there at 12:03.
So I am curious to see what she has to say. Maybe she can shed some light on some new things. But I don't want to jump the gun and be like, oh, it's completely rigged. I think there are elements to just everything that happens on TV. It's not going to be 100% authentic, you know? There's still going to be an element of production to drive the story. And some of the girls, I mean, I think the girls know it. And I think they just, you know, hope that they get a storyline that they are happy with. I know if I were to ever to get cast on Drag Race, you know, maybe I wouldn't go in and say filler queen, because then that might just be my fate.
I just think it's a cautionary tale for the girls that it is reality television and that not everything is going to play out, quote unquote, in the reality that we see, but Drag Race as a franchise has to build a reality, and they're going to pull some stuff that we might not like, you know, like, okay, cool, you did a good job, whatever, but that's not going to work for our storyline that we're building. And it's going to be interesting to see Tamisha expand on that and actually do some kind of expose on how the inner workings of like production actually works in Drag Race.
Yeah, I think because this season has been so long too,
mm-hmm.
it's just been a lot more noticeable on how much it's actually produced and edited, because it's just like when the season moves quickly, things that kind of don't make sense or we didn't feel good about or we felt was kind of unfair for maybe this one queen to win or this other queen to go home. When the season's moving quick, you kind of just like you forget about it and you focus on the next thing. But when the season goes by so slowly, we're like,
we're marinating still.
Yeah, it's like we have a whole lot more time to scrutinize every little thing that's happening. And I think how they do the show that works when it's quick doesn't work as well when they have to do it for an extended amount of episodes.
No, I agree with that, because I feel like they tried to do something different in the sense of they were like, oh, we want to give them more content. We want to give them a sense of relatability to the girls early on. And it might have backfired a little bit because we have like 12 episodes and, you know, half the cast is still there.
Yeah.
And I think more of these stories are going to start coming out because, you know, you get sold this dream. And then when you get there, it becomes something different. And I think that's what Tamisha is experiencing at this point. But I'm super curious to see what she has to say. You know, we hear the rumblings over the years. It'll be nice to see someone actually, you know, hold production accountable and actually dive into what these queens experience on the show. In the case of, is it too soon to say Drag Race is rigged? Nah, baby, it's not too soon.
I think that it is too soon to say that it is completely rigged. I do think it's not too soon to say that it is overproduced.
We'll say production has a hand in everything that goes on. How about that?
Yeah. This season in particular, this season has been rough. And that's that on that.
I ain't mad at it.
And hey, you know, it's an award-winning ass show. You know what I'm saying? So maybe they feel like what they're doing is the way to have a successful reality TV show. Let's see if season 13 wins some awards.
You know they will.
I hope, but we'll see. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back talking about late news.
Hey.
Never too late, never too late, never too
girl,
late.
Girl, bye.
You're listening to Too Soon Podcast.
Oh, did you want to talk about Utica and the roast?
Oh, did we? Did we?
Oof.
I mean, that poor baby, that roast was cringy.
Yeah.
And that's being nice.
Yeah. You know, if they tell you not to make certain jokes and you do it anyway, it's probably not going to go well. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, she set herself up for failure.
She did. And poor girl. I mean, I think Utica's really funny in person. Like, hanging out with her, she's fun. She's fun. It's a whole lot harder to make roast jokes because, you know, it's like insult comedy, but it has to be funny. It can't just be insults. And it was just
cringy watching the panel, entertaining the panel. Yeah. And they're legit dragging you.
Yeah, Rob, my husband, he was like, you know, it's bad when, you know, like you've completely mm-hmm. lost control of the audience and now they're heckling you, and their heckling is funnier than the things you're actually saying. So
I think the crowd was trying to be respectful to her in the sense of, like, even as bad as she was doing, they were still trying to throw her some bones. But she did some stuff that was, like, kind of disrespectful. Some of the comments that she made about the judges and her not demanding, but making a point of trying to tell RuPaul to stand up when it, bitch, her name is on the show. Like,
it was very cringy, but RuPaul did, like, RuPaul's response to it was really, really good. Giving her the FU, like, sticking a finger at her. Honestly,
I would have went home and cried.
Girl, at that point, I would have just sent myself home. After that roast, I would have been like, thank you so much for your time. I'm going to go pack my bags.
Exactly.
I don't even need to lip sync. I'm done here. I appreciate the time. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm just going to leave and never come back. Thanks.
I do like Utica, though, because I feel like she always has, like, this, I don't want to call it a level of delusion, but there's, like, this level of joy that she has where she's just like, you know, the ship is on fire, but I'm still going to have a good time.
Yeah.
Like, good for you, girl.
Yeah. She made an apology on Twitter, and there are people on every different side of it, you know, especially because of some of her fat shaming jokes and making well sounds at Nina West. Not her best moment for sure, but I think she can recover from this as long as she, you know, holds herself accountable and finds a way to make fun of herself for the past and make amends to people going forward.
And I think she will. I think Utica has a very good head on her shoulders, and I just think she had a lapse of judgment. I mean, girl, you live and you learn. She'll be on All Stars.
Yeah. All right, we're back. It's time for some late news. It's new news to us, and it'll be late news for you, unless it's new news for you.
I mean, it's a week late, so I hope you saw it.
You know, hey, if you are not, like, if you're not a political junkie like me and Malaya, then this will be fresh news for you. But if you follow MSNBC and CNN regularly like we do, then
it's you late.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck I just said, but either way, here's some late news that we think you should know about. First up is Ron Johnson. Now, this happened a couple weeks ago, so this is late for us.
It's late, late, late.
It's like super late. But Ron Johnson, he made a comment a couple weeks ago saying that he wasn't scared of the insurrectionists, but he would have been afraid if it were BLM. And obviously that makes perfect sense for the narrative that he lives in. He's a white man in Wisconsin, a Republican who obviously, of course, he's going to feel safe with the insurrectionists because he's on their side. He sees them as allies. They're his voters. They're not going to hurt him.
Well, you know, they're good old boys, you know, they're just doing what they need to do for the country.
Yeah. He's not afraid of these white men out here trying to overthrow the government. But if the black people who just want to be treated fairly try to come up in there, he would have been clutching his pearls. There's nothing more to it. I think the only way we can move forward is to get rid of him. So, like, in Wisconsin, you got to come out and vote in 2022 to get rid of him. I think we talked about Ron Johnson before being a piece of shit, but definitely, like, if you're not politically active, at the bare minimum, vote him out of office next year.
I just think as Wisconsinites, we need to start taking back our power. You know, they were very powerful in, like, the progressive movement in the past. And I don't know how this shift has happened. And it's sad to see. But as far as Ron Johnson goes, like, I'll be black today. I'll be black tomorrow. I'll be black anytime I see you. So you're going to have to get used to seeing black people.
Mm-hmm. Somebody like that doesn't deserve to be a senator with that type of mindset. He's playing right into the hands of white supremacists. And we can't have that in this country, in this government. We just can't.
100% agreed. You just can't really say, forget everybody who doesn't look like me anymore. We have a voice now. And I think that's one of the big issues that people are having a hard time adjusting to. They're not used to everyone having a seat at the table. In the past, they were able to express their views and not be challenged. Well, now you're being challenged. So what are you going to do?
All right, up next, we got Biden. He canceled, I think, $100 million in student loans for kids who went to fraudulent universities. So like ITT Tech and, you know, online or like shopping mall style schools that weren't even accredited. All of their loans got canceled. I just wish he would have extended it to anybody who felt like their degree was fraudulent. I have a degree in mass comm. It really ain't do shit for me. I went to a PWI. I thought it was going to be like a different world, and it was not that. So I too...
Explain the PWI for the people.
Primarily white institute. I went to a primarily white institute in college. I wanted to get the black experience, the black college vibe. I did get little, you know, flares of it, but I didn't get the experience I wanted. So I too would like a refund. I too would like my money back. I would like my loans forgiven.
My thing is like other countries don't do this to, you know, their college educated people. You know, they go out of their way to make sure like the people who are trying to contribute to society are having a chance to do it in a way that isn't going to be detrimental to them. And here it's just like, okay, you want to progress yourself? Here's $40,000 of debt.
And that's just like, if you're lucky, $40,000, if you got to take out student loans, because any kind of, you know, a professional degree or, you know, some sort of postgraduate type mm-hmm. of degree, whether it be for law school or med school, you're talking about $200,000-$400,000 of student loans. Even if you pay, you know, like they give you a payment plan for 20 or 25 or 30 years or whatever to pay off your student loans. And then they'll forgive you for whatever you have left if you make payments for, you know, 25 years. But what they forgive you for, you still get taxed on it like it's income.
Girl.
Yeah.
And also 25 years, it's like, that's no deal. That's a quarter of your life. You are signing a contract to like sign away your life. It's like, girl, I can't.
Yeah. So, ciao. Anyways, but there's been a lot of news with Biden this week. He did his first press conference, or should I say last week, he did his first press conference mm-hmm. and took questions. A lot of the questions were about the filibuster, which I think we're going to talk more about later. But for sure, the filibuster is going to be an issue if we want to have real change while we have a Democratic House and Senate and president. With only 50 votes in the Senate, the filibuster is gonna cause a lot of problems. So one of the big news things that came out is that he kind of hinted towards the fact that he would be willing to go to a more extreme of like potentially maybe getting rid of the filibuster in order to get certain things passed. And it was his first time kind of really saying that in public, because he had been more so like trying to stay out of it, or like, you know, that's the Senate's job and they have to figure it out. And then somebody asked him during the press conference, does he feel the filibuster? I think they asked him, like, is it part of Jim Crow or something? They basically tried to relate white supremacy and the filibuster together. And he was like, absolutely, absolutely it is.
Well, I think he's in a weird place. He's in a weird place where he's trying to appease so many different groups that he ends up pandering in a sense. And I don't know how he's going to be able to continue to just toe the line. He needs to set certain, he needs to draw hard lines at this point. It's just kind of like, no, we get it. You want to be like the people's person, but you need to let people know where you stand in certain points. And because of that, it's been hard for people to get a feel of what he's doing. If that makes sense. I mean, it makes sense in my head.
If you say so.
Girl, bye. Leave me alone. It makes sense in my head.
Yeah.
But he's been doing that from the beginning. Like, he's been trying to, like, corner certain markets of, like, voter bases or this, that, and the other. And he doesn't really know how to talk to people. Like, he, especially when it came to, like, minority groups, he didn't really know how to relate to them. And I think that's what we're seeing now. He's, like, trying to be like, I want to dip my toe in and say what I want to say, but I also don't want to alienate this group, or I also don't want to alienate another group. That's what we're seeing with, like, the filibuster, because it's just like, how do I keep everyone on the same page and still do what I need to do? And I'm going to be quiet now because Linda just told me I was stupid.
No, I wasn't saying, I was like, also looking up something at the same time, so I wasn't completely paying attention to what you said. So you probably made a very valid point. I just didn't hear it.
I'm not talking to you.
God damn it. I'm sorry. I was trying to look up the question that they asked Biden about the filibuster, where he specifically like tied it to racism. But I think he knows, like a lot of us know, a lot of these things were, you know, put in place to keep the minority or the party of minorities in check, you know, to keep them from being able to create real change and progress. So the filibuster has got to go. And honestly, Biden taking like even like a little baby step towards getting rid of the filibuster, I mean, it's beneficial, but at the end of the day, we got to get Joe Manchin and Senator Sinema on board. Her and Joe Manchin are the most Republican Democrats, and it's going to be hard to get them on board.
Well, they're fucking shit up for the rest of us.
That's some bullshit. The other thing is the bills that a lot of state Republican-controlled legislators are trying to push through to suppress the vote. There's been a big wave of voter suppression laws that have been, I think it's like 43 states have tried.
Well, damn.
Yeah. It passed in Georgia, and Georgia is the one that's getting a lot of attention right now because...
Oh, yeah. I have a lot to say about Georgia.
Yeah. They're not... The bill doesn't allow people to give food and water to voters waiting in line to vote.
Well, we got to set it up for the people. So if we're going to talk about it, just for clarification, Georgia has recently had a voter election reformation law. That's not what it is. It's a voter suppression law. They're trying to make sure that people of color will be more disenfranchised than they have been in the past by making sure that they can't vote on certain days that are key for Black voters, especially Sundays, where we bus people out to go to these polls and this, that, and the other. They're trying to make it as uncomfortable as possible to be able to cast their votes. So more strict ID laws, more strict laws for when we can put in absentee ballots, and also more strict laws for how we are able to get these absentee ballots. Mm-hmm. And it's very detrimental to people of color.
Because the places this is going to affect the most are obviously going to be the biggest counties in Georgia, and those counties are going to be like predominantly Black. If you limit the days and times that people can vote, then you're forcing more people to have to like stand in long lines in order to vote in the biggest counties, and you can't give anyone food or water while they wait. So they're trying to do everything to make it harder and harder, more, just like you said, more uncomfortable, so that way they can discourage them from voting. Because, you know, this is not going to affect bumfuck nowhere, where there's only, you know, a county of 500 people. They're all going to be able to go in and out and vote at the same one little location they were already voting at. So it's not affecting. Exactly. But it is going to seriously affect places where there are Black people in large numbers. This is going to be detrimental to them.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with reaction to the wave that we saw in Georgia. We saw a lot of people come out due to Abrams. She mobilized the Black community in Georgia. And now that Republicans are starting to take note of that, they're like, how do we deal with that?
Exactly.
And it's sad. It's fucking sad.
Yeah. The last thing I wanted to talk about was the fucking kids at the border. Now, it was already bad before Biden took office. Biden was pressed a lot in the press conference about the children at the border. And I don't think we can completely blame him for the situation that is happening at the border. Because even though there was an influx after he became president, those people were going to come anyway. You know, there was a point made. People were trying to say, well, the people are coming here because you're president and they think that you'll be nicer than Trump. But there's more to it. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, he has a lot to fix. You know, he came in already with an administration that from a previous administration that truly dismantled a lot of our immigration system when it came to like how we handle people coming in at the border. And so all we can do really is hope that he's able to get it done quickly. And I think he wants to get it done quickly. Mm-hmm. I think we all kind of know this is a bad look, but we can't really put all of the burden on him. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not just, it's not Biden's fault alone that they're coming here. These people left their country for a reason. And it wasn't just because Biden is a nice guy. They wanted to leave their country. They didn't feel like they could live and survive with their family or the kids or whatever. And they wanted a better life that they didn't think they could get in their home country. So that's why they came to the United States.
But let's be real, like these kids, they had no choice in everything that they've been subjected to. They weren't saying, oh, I want to move here. I want to do this. I want to do that. The Biden administration is getting a bad rap, but they're literally trying to bring these children into a space that they can be reconnected with their parents, that they don't have to be stuck in a space by themselves. And it's hard to watch. It really is.
Now, the kids are not in the best situation. They're not. You know, a lot of these kids, especially staying at Border and Customs or whatever, are staying in unacceptable living conditions. I think another thing, too, is like a lot of people have this idea that we're talking about a lot of little kids. And majority of the kids are teenagers, 14, 15, 16, 17. And so they're not all children, but there are some young children, some very young children. It's just not in comparison to the total number of kids that they have. It's a small percentage of kids. Either way, I mean, there's nothing we can do but give him time to fix it. You know what I'm saying? Give him a couple weeks to fix it, you know?
Right.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But we are over time for late news, so we're going to wrap it up and we will talk to you in a few minutes. We'll be back talking about all of the hot goss happening in entertainment and pop culture. Yes, I shouldn't say hot goss. I shouldn't say hot goss because Alaska and Willem kind of own that. We'll be back with some
we'll be back with whatever's happening in Hollywood.
Some spicy tea.
There you go.
All right, BRB.
Too soon.
Hey, well, welcome back to Too Soon. And we're here with Pop Culture with your girl, Malaya Marble. And the first topic I want to jump into is these issues with the Vlog Squad that's been headed by David Dobrik. And they have recently come into some troubles with a young woman who we refer to as Hannah, having rape allegations brought up against their collective. They put out a video that was called "She Doesn't Know What She's Getting Into." And this young woman participated in a threesome and she was sexually assaulted. She was too intoxicated to be able to consent, and they posted this video. And the young woman reached out a couple hours later and she was like, hey, I don't feel comfortable with this being put up. I don't feel comfortable with what has happened. And now she's speaking out in 2021. This video had taken place in 2018. And they have lost huge endorsements over this. They were dropped by DoorDash. They were dropped by EA Sports. They were dropped by multiple fast food franchises. And this has cost them a lot of money. And we wouldn't even be talking about the money because this young woman was sexually assaulted. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that, Linda.
Well, I think it's terrible. I mean, I don't know this guy from a bag of rice. Mm-hmm. But I looked up his picture and I feel like I absolutely don't condone anything that he did. Mm-hmm. I think it's terrible. These kids should know better, but like they probably come from a place of privilege. and they think they can get away with doing whatever they wanted to. And, you know, like another white guy or a group of white guys sexually assaulting a woman gets deplatformed. What's new?
It's a tough subject. I think it was an abuse of power. Like, I know a lot of times, like, power goes to people's heads and they think that they're untouchable. And I feel like with this new age of social media, it exposes the real from the fake. Like, that was built in you already. And we're putting these people on a platform. So, like, going back to what we talked about, you know, the past week where we were talking about how we need to be vetting these people before we give them a platform. And then now they're coming back and realizing, oh man, I abused my power and my platform. And it's I don't even want to say it's sad to watch. It's just like, bruh, you should have been a better person.
Very that. Cool. So there is this new show on HBO Max. I know. It's on HBO Max. Jeez. It's only like $12.99, I think.
They'll get it.
Or just steal it from a friend. Find a friend with HBO Max and, you know, log in.
You right.
Okay. Find a friend with HBO Max and log in. Share accounts. That's what this new generation is about, honey. We share. We spread the love. If you got Netflix, the whole team got Netflix.
I was like, if you got Netflix, you the hookup.
Okay. If your friend got Disney Plus, he better put the whole team on. You know what I'm saying?
We just trying it all together. We all gonna figure it out.
Yeah. So HBO Max has this new show called Generation. The T is replaced with the plus sign. I'm not really sure why, but it's the little, you know, spicy flavor to the title. So it's called Generation. It's very reminiscent of Degrassi, but the lead character is a queer man of color. He is, I think, he is biracial. He definitely is biracial in real life, but I'm not sure if his character is biracial or not. I haven't made it that far in the series. I've only watched the first episode. My husband has watched all of the episodes that have already come out. I think they have like 5 or 6 episodes out. And they are new episodes every Thursday. So, yeah, HBO Max, give us like a little sponsorship, throw us a little money for all this promo I'm giving them. The lead actor is this guy named Justice Smith. He is queer in real life, and he's actually in a relationship with another Black queer actor named Nicholas Ash, who's on Queen Sugar. So I love Queen Sugar. I'm like a season behind. It's a show that comes on OWN. It should have been winning awards. It is great acting. It has a great cast. Queen Sugar is that bitch. And the character that Nicholas Ash plays, he's like the son of like the main daughter on Queen Sugar. If you know what I'm talking about, you know the show, then like, but if you don't, watch Queen Sugar. If you like Black culture, if you like Black shows, you will love Queen Sugar. It's also on Hulu. They have all of the past seasons on Hulu. And but anyway, I was supposed to be talking about Generation. Generation is also really, really good. It's really cute. And I really like that there's a lot of queer narratives in the show. There's multiple queer characters. There's, you know, you have your gay queer person. You have your bisexual guy. You got some lesbians. All of these things. I don't know if there are any trans people yet, but there might be. There's also some teen pregnancy. It's giving very Degrassi, but on HBO with a bigger budget. I'm not going to say the acting is Emmy worthy, but I will say that I like the show.
They're trying.
It's not Euphoria. There, you know, Zenaida is not out here killing it. But
who was Zenaida D?
Zenaida.
Zendaya.
Oh, Zendaya.
Child, you said Zenaida D. Then you said Zenaida. No,
I said Zenaida. I said Zenaida.
Her name is Zendaya. I can't.
Oh shit. Okay, Zendaya. Hell. But the show is cute. And Jesus Christ. If you want to watch it, DM me. Maybe I'll give you my HBO login. I'm just kidding. I think that wraps it up for pop culture. Ooh, Our interview with Ronnie Bunny is next.
My cosplay babe, I love them so much. Ronnie Bunny is going to come in and talk to us about identity and just being a queer Black person who has to navigate the world of cosplay, because it is so much different from everything else. Like, y'all think we just show up in costumes looking like, you know, Sailor Moon? No.
Mm-hmm.
Being a Black person in cosplay is hard.
Yeah, and truly. And cosplay is very similar to drag, but also very different from drag.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we kind of like live in the same world. We're both given a fantasy, just different kinds of fantasies.
You right.
Yeah, and she also talks to us about starting her OnlyFans, and like, she's fucking killing it, and she's amazing. So we'll catch up with her right after this break.
All right, coming back in with our interview with the illustrious, the beautiful, the alluring Ronnie Bunny, cosplay superstar. How are you?
Hi, honey. And you flatter me. Not at all, but thank you.
No, you are in my books iconic and legendary. Like, when I first knew you were coming to Wisconsin, I was so excited. I was like, I need to be around this human being and get to know them, because I feel like we kind of vibe off of a lot of the same wavelengths, you know?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that I got to run into you when I did, because when I say that when I lived in Milwaukee, I went out like all of three times. And it's like somebody in the universe was like, these bitches need to meet. And maybe like the one time I went out and I got to see you up on stage doing your damn thing. And I was like, oh, I am not leaving until I'm friends with this person. And
absolutely. Absolutely. I really appreciate that, because I just like, I feel like a lot of people didn't get what I was doing with my drag, especially when it came to like, you know, the subculture of like nerd culture and drag crossing. But you get it. So I was just like, okay, these are my people.
Exactly. And you know what? I kind of felt a lot of like, almost like what I do, especially when I'm, you know, cosplaying as dudes in like my own way is kind of drag too. Like, I feel like a lot of what got me into cosplaying itself was just this ability to turn into somebody completely different. And I mean, I definitely make a lot of my stuff. I'm not the best by any means, but I think the biggest joy that I get from it is really like getting into a space and putting on a mask and saying, all right, that's who I am. And then just living it for a little bit. It's a lot of fun, but I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here. I'm absolutely sure.
No, I completely relate to that. And I was going to ask, like, I noticed like amongst a lot of cosplayers, sometimes there's like this rigid line where you try to avoid like what's deemed like crossplay or what's deemed like, you know, gender, like gender variant cosplay, this, that, and the other. And what I really appreciate about what you do is that you don't make it the focus of what you're doing. You just do a character, male, female, non-binary creature, whatever the case may be, and you own it. And I really enjoy that, because it doesn't come off as like pandering to like maybe the queer community or anything like that. But speaking of which, I was going to ask, how do you identify, if you don't mind me asking, and how has queerness played a part in your journey as a cosplayer?
I am queer, first and foremost. I spent a lot of time back and forth with myself in the ways that I identify, both in terms of gender and sexuality. I think gender-wise, I do fall somewhere around like a demigirl kind of category, where it's like there are days where I wake up and I'm like, you know, she's a woman. And then I wake up and I'm like, I don't know. What if I was just like a fairy? You know, what if I was just something that's not even a people person thing? But at the same time, I also know for a fact that I am going to be, you know, assumed woman. And like, I don't feel like there are any pronouns that you could use against me that would like make me feel any type of way. So in that same way, I don't feel that I experience any actual transphobia. So I kind of like, when I'm talking about like trans issues, because I'm a huge advocate, I kind of talk about it in a way that removes myself from that. Even though if you were to sit me down and, you know, ruler to my forehead, what is your gender? I was like, uncommittal hand wave. But I oftentimes talk about it with myself removed, because I was like, this isn't a problem for me. Like, sadly, that this is a problem for anybody, but it's not something that's like hurting me in my everyday life. So I would say that. And then just in terms of sexuality, just everywhere, honestly. Like I say, it's like 90% women, like 4% fictional men, and then like 1% actual men, probably, I think.
I got you. And I appreciate, that's really cool hearing you like speak on it, because I know a lot of times there's such a push to define yourself and put yourself into a certain category.
Exactly. And there are some people I feel like that get a lot of validation by being able to say, this is who I am with a label. I can find other people who identify with this existence, mm-hmm. and that can validate me and mine. I truly believe that no matter what, especially with sexuality, this is my big controversial opinion for the podcast, is that everybody's sexuality is 100% on a spectrum. And even if you say, I am strictly this, I am a gold star lesbian, that everyone's always going to have some weird, you know, parallel universe statistical anomaly that would defy that. So I think that each person has their own sexuality that is literally custom tailor made to just them, because your attraction is built up on so many things between experiences, mm-hmm. and the people that you looked up to growing up, and just, yeah. you know, what makes you happy and what you need to find that fulfillment. And it's so transcendent. It's an experience. I feel like that level of love, but I'm rambling. I'm gonna shut up.
Okay. No, you're fine. No, you were preaching. You were preaching.
Thank you.
I 100,000% agree. Just to switch up gears a little bit, I know Linda was interested in just getting your perspective on like race issues.
Yeah, I mean, because here's the thing. I'm not like heavily involved in the cosplay community, but what I get from like Twitter and stuff like that, the only time I hear anything about it is when there are people of color doing characters that aren't traditionally Black. And, you know, there's a lot of people who have opinions about it. Do you experience that at all? Or how is that for you? And what are your opinions on it? Because I mean, obviously, I know you don't give a fuck and you're going to mm-hmm. do whatever character you want to do. But like, how has that affected your like cosplay journey?
I've had it happen, but I am also granted light-skinned, skinny, and femme presenting, so I'm not getting the brunt of a lot mm-hmm. of these opinions. A lot right. of these are people who are darker toned, who are plus size. Sometimes it happens when I'm cross-playing, but I also don't have that huge of a chest to bind. So I've actually been told that I have a very androgynous appeal about me. Anyways, when I cross-play, some people are like, they don't even assume that I'm, you know, AFAB at all. So mm-hmm. I'm definitely like on the shallower end of any sort of scrutiny that would happen. But yeah, I still see it. Yeah, it even still happens to me. I think I've also been doing it for so long that a part of my brain almost automatically blocks it out. Like they say something and I see the word Black and I'm like, oh, you're invalid. Anyways, going forward.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And that I was just going to say that's a very solid point to make, though. It's like, because you're light skin and you're stunning to look at, people are, you know, they'll buy into it if it's mm-hmm. you. But I think, you know, like when you see a dark skin person do these cosplay looks, you know, like if you see a dark skin Goku, I don't know, somebody might be upset about it. And I think that it sucks that like we have to live in this world where it's like certain people, it's okay if they do it, but other people, they can't, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I get the, you know, you're kind of racially ambiguous. So I'm not exactly sure what kind of racial comment to make about you. So I'm just going to kind of squint. But I've been, you know, surrounded by Black people my whole life. I've been cosplaying with Black people my whole life. And they'll get like, you know, oh, ghetto Broly. Oh, that's my favorite. Or especially with it being Dragon Ball Z and the, you know, the Saiyans being like yeah. monkey-esque like uh-huh. variants, like that delves into racist territory very easily. Right. It's sad and it's disgusting, but I guess at the end of the day, the only people who are being vocal, I feel, about it are the people who are so scared inside mm-hmm. of themselves that part of me just kind of feels bad. And it's a cry for attention. It's, I have literally nothing else to offer the world positive. And the only way that I can feel fulfilled is to, you know, try to bring someone down to my level. And it, hurts me to watch people get hurt by it, but it also hurts me to know that there is somebody that was just so let down by the people that were supposed to lift them up in their life that this is where they go to find fulfillment, you know?
Right.
Yeah. It's really sad. Now, just like Linda was saying, I really appreciate you. Like, I know there's a lot of times a conversation on recognizing like different privileges, this, that, and the other that we may have in certain scenes. And what I see that you do that I really appreciate is that you are pro marginalized groups in every sense of the word because of how they fit into like proximity to, you know, what's socially acceptable in that term, you know, in that case, whiteness. And I just see you uplifting people who may not get the fair shake that they deserve because of that. And you've been a champion, I think, in my eyes, for everyone in cosplay, especially, you know, people who look like us. And okay, so you bad, you're smart.
I appreciate nice.
I'm like,
that.
I'm over you.
I'm over you. Just drop dead. I hate you. but like, honestly, I feel like there is no point in having a voice if you're not going to use it, honestly. And I don't, maybe it's just like a never forget your roots type of situation, but I've always just kind of, and I get that, I think too, from just the way that I was raised, that it's, you know, people are people, I think, at the end of the day. And yeah. I have the time to make sure you know that, I guess.
So speaking of, you know, different experiences with being Black in cosplay, I just was wondering personally for you, are there any characters that you would like to see reimagined as people of color?
Characters that I would like to see. Honestly, at this point, we're doing it a lot. And I want to see more characters of color that aren't building off of the shoulders of an established white character. And that's not to discredit the, you know, diversity that we're starting to see here, especially in places like comics where you'll have like a hero that dies and then Falcon will become Captain America. And now you have Black Captain America, or, you know, Diana will die. And now Nubia canonically was Wonder Woman before Diana, but I won't get into that.
They're not ready for that conversation.
They're not ready for that conversation though. But yeah, like, and don't get me wrong, I absolutely love seeing, you know, people care just as much for these Black-faced versions of characters they cared for when they were white. But I also kind of want to see more narratives that, you know, are just completely and 100% Black for Black or any type of minority. And I appreciate that. A lot of outlets that were able to do that.
I had another question for you. I'm going to switch gears a little bit, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I might be wrong, but I think I saw that you auditioned for the voice of Rouge the Bat for an upcoming like Sonic remake.
Yeah, it was. Okay. So it was a small little independent love project from a voice actor that's pretty popular on TikTok. And I think they've got a lot of their following for doing parodies of My Hero Academia, because they have this one person has a very convincing version of both Deku and Katsuki's English dub. Like he can do an impersonation almost to the T, and he would have conversations with himself Deku and Bakugo, just saying the wildest things that you can imagine. It was hilarious. There is an infamous, I actually knew of the fan fiction before I auditioned, called like Sonic High School. And it's so bad. It's so bad that it's good. It's everything that you remember of like early 2000s fan fiction culture online, where it was just the cringiest thing, but it's that nostalgia cringe that makes it good and funny, and you want to keep reading it just because it's completely nonsensical at the same time.
Right.
I will say, as fun as it was to audition to that, because I'd also never actually done anything close to formal voice acting before that audition, they did end up, I believe, going with a different voice actor that was also popular on TikTok, but they were popular on TikTok for their Rouge the Bat voice.
Well, you sounded so good. Like I heard,
I did, thank
like,
you.
You sounded so good. And I was like, okay, book sis now.
Book sis
like,
now.
Right now.
I was like, I still have the reels. So if anyone else is trying to do a Sonic project and needs a or character that sounds like Rouge, hit my inbox.
Yeah, I thought that was so cool. Ronnie for Rouge. Yes.
I might just do like some little like practice reels for fun just to see how people like them. I don't know how crisp I sound, but I got like a new Yeti microphone and wild and I'm finna just.
Oh, no, you sound great. You sound great.
Thank you. I feel like I sound great.
Yes. I feel like all the guests that we have better radio voices than we do, because Eddie Danger was on last week and his voice is like so good on the pod. Your voice is really, really good. We had Lucy Stuhl. Her voice was amazing. Yes. She has. So like everybody we have on just sounds like they should be hosting the podcast.
Right.
And we just sound like old decrepit men.
Listen, you wouldn't be able to flow without the rocks making the river. That's all I'm going to say.
Right.
I know you have like a hella following. Like people love you. They respond to your content. I know you're popping on TikTok. You're popping on Insta.
I'm repopping on TikTok. Follow my TikTok at It's Bunny Black because I got banned on TikTok like five days before my birthday at 80K.
Oh no. I didn't know that.
Yeah. She had to start all over again. She submitted an appeal. TikTok said no.
Oh my god.
Okay, now we got to start another justice campaign already.
Justice for Ronnie. God damn
give me
it.
They're not going to give me my account back. I've already accepted it. But if you guys can help me rebuild again, I promise It's Buddy Black is going to be 10,000 times more popping than my other account was because I'm going live very regularly and I'm trying to post like every single day. So gosh darn it.
That's so good because like I just didn't have the energy. I had one little viral video and honey, I just was like, I don't have time to do this every day.
And TikTok's algorithm wants content creators to post like 2 or 3 times a day. And I was like, do you know how long it takes me to make one TikTok?
Right.
They have to shoot it like 15 times. So I love drag and I love watching Drag Race, of course, but I hate talking to other people about Drag Race that don't do drag because I feel there's so much of like an expectation and it's the people who have the most to say will never do it. They'll never.
Do you have that same thing?
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely. And cosplay too. And it's always going to be the people that will never have the guts to do it or, you know, but I'll have like someone who's been cosplaying and won like world level competitions who comment on my cosplay photos and be like, oh my God, I love you. You're so cute. You're so cute. I love that character. And then there'll be a dude right under it who has probably never even like left his house in the past year, much less like gone like cosplaying or done anything like that. It'd be like, wrong shade of purple. And I'm like, well, then be quiet.
Right.
You get me the wig then, sir.
I was going to piggyback on it. It's like really irritating. Like when you'll go out, when we were out in the clubs actively, you'll have like the one or two, you know, bar flies that come in and apparently they know everything about drag because they've seen every episode of Drag Race and they'll come up to you and be like, this is wrong. This is wrong. I loved your performance, but you could work on this, 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 and this. And I'm just looking at them like,
Did I ask you?
And, you know, I'm over here standing in $500 of couture, which is not a lot. And you're over here looking like you look. So leave me alone.
Right. So much to say. And they'll be like, oh, well, I was watching this season of Drag Race and I don't like this girl. And I'm like, you realize that she was edited to have a storyline, right? You realize that at the end of the season, literally all of the girls like each other. And just because you have a fan favorite and they beefed with them one time and Untucked does not mean that that person is an awful person.
They're not even thinking about y'all's opinions.
Right. You could put rattlesnake sounds underneath me saying anything and it's going to make it sound a lot more shady than it actually is. And it's like, I can't stand people who don't understand editing. And that's another reason why I don't talk to people about Drag Race, because they'll have all these opinions on who these people are as a person. And I'm like, you don't know them. Right. You don't.
I am going to throw the snake rattle though underneath something you say now. I'm just going to
throw it under this right now. I'm throwing shade.
Yes. I have one last question for you. And it was basically, so like cosplay, there's this certain level of accuracy that you have to have when it comes to like being genuine to the character versus like me looking at it as a drag queen who does cosplay. I have a lot of cosplay circles. It'll be like, you look stunning, but that wasn't the assignment. So I was just wondering, like, do you see a lot of like strictness when it comes to people like respecting what you do in terms of how correct it is to the authenticity of said character?
I see it happen a lot. And I think that also kind of goes directly back to, you know, those are always going to be criticisms from people who don't cosplay, because in their brain, they're not seeing, you know, such and such cosplayer as blank. They're seeing such and such cosplayer wanting to be blank. And that might not necessarily be the case. They might want to do something inspired by them and, you know, put their own little touch on it. I could not tell you. Okay, so there are two things that I constantly keep on, no matter what cosplay I'm doing, because they're just part of me and I like them, and people absolutely fucking hate it. And that is that I'll always wear my little tattoo choker with a little bunny rabbit on it, and I'll always leave my septum out. I don't care if the character doesn't have a nose ring. I don't actually even know any characters with septums. I have a septum because I like the way it looks, and I'm not tucking it in. I don't care if that's your waifu when she doesn't have one and I'm ruining it. Die mad.
I love that. It's this like fine line that people play, and it's like with drag we have more liberty to like kind of like do whatever, but I feel like with cosplay, how you present a character is put under a lot more scrutiny.
Because a lot of these fans, a lot of the fans have like these emotional ties to characters too, and sometimes I feel like a lot of them have this unhealthy sort of territorialness over them as well. But I think, as you were saying, like there's to an extent an expectation for drag queens to kind of put their own personal spin on it, because I feel like drag is seen as more of an art than cosplay is, whereas it's more like cosplay is supposed to be the recreation of something to a T. Drag is more of like putting your essence and expressing it in different ways, I feel like. And that, going all the way back to the very beginning of the interview, is why I consider my cosplay to be drag.
Yes, I live.
Truly. I did want to ask you like about OnlyFans and what got you into that, and like how's that journey been for you?
Man, listen, I've been hoeing. It's great. So what got me into OnlyFans? I originally was kind of like very much I'm a prude. I grew up like in a Christian household. So there was like so much unlearning that I have done about everything throughout my entire life so far. But that was definitely like just sex positivity and openness was definitely one of them. So when I joined OnlyFans, I had no intention on doing anything lewd at all whatsoever. I was just kind of like, I'm working full time. People just, you know, every time I posted something on Facebook or posted something on Instagram, I would always get comments that like, they were happy to see me, but I just never post and they wish that I would post more. And I was like, well, listen, you pay me and then I'll post more. And then I was like, wait a minute, I can set that up. But then as I was doing it, I started to realize, you know, that a lot of people that were following my OnlyFans, these were the people that have been following me on my cosplay since like the very beginning. These are the people who were like really, really big fans. And a lot of people were like coming in and they'd be like, do you do lewd stuff? And I was like, I mean, kind of, but not really. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, all right, well, let me know when you're doing lewd stuff. And then they'd bounce. And I'd be like, I mean, I can. Are you going to pay more if I do? And they're just like throwing large sums of cash at me. And I was like, say less. I was like, it took me a lot to even get there too, on top of just like having that mindset of just like being like more on the conservative side growing up. But on top of that, I've actually struggled with body dysmorphia for like a very, very long time. So it's like, I would look at myself and I'd be like, you are shaped weird. So nobody's going to want to pay. No one's going to want to pay to see you, you know? Wow. And I feel like, I don't know. I was beating myself up about it for a long time. And that's also what prevented me from, you know, starting it at all. Cause I was just kind of like, I wouldn't pay for me. What would make me think somebody else would pay for me? But that just kind of goes to show you that a lot of times, that inner voice is just like, you might not be your type, and that's fine. You can have a type that's not you, but that doesn't mean that you as a type is bad. It just means you're not your type, you know? Right. So somebody else gonna like it. And if they want to fund you to do it, then let them.
So I'm gonna get some money for taking some pictures. Come on,
I'm
now.
I'm saying, you know? So now I am doing like partial nudity, not like really full nudity. Okay. So some people will be like, you're doing like sex work. And I'm like, kinda. It's more like nude modeling, if anything, because I'm not doing anything explicitly pornographic.
Right.
It do be suggestive. There's that.
But that's good. I mean, like, hey, you're giving the people what they want to see. And like, if it fits in your brand and it, you don't, have any opposition to it, then like, I don't see why not. You know what I'm saying? Like,
mm-hmm.
You just brought up how you struggle with body dysmorphia. And I did want to mm-hmm. like talk to you about it, because like, I wouldn't say that I struggle with body dysmorphia to the point where it oppresses me, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I don't like to show off my body. I cover it up in drag, or mm-hmm. when I go out as a boy, I like, you know, I'm wearing big baggy clothes, so I cover up a lot. And it's very mm-hmm. rare that you'll see me like in like something scantily or something like that. So but how mm-hmm. did you overcome that, and what was like your process, or what's your process now for, you know, doing stuff like OnlyFans and overcoming, I guess, some of your body dysmorphia?
To be perfectly honest, I wouldn't even say that like it's something that I have overcome. It's still something that, you know, I like to use the ball and the button metaphor, where you kind of have like a button that's in a box, and that ball can be very tiny and it's just kind of rolling around, and maybe it'll hit that button, but you know, it kind of rolls away and then it can bounce over some other walls. But then other days that ball is really big and it has no choice but to continue to hit that button over and over and over and over again. And you're paralyzed in front of your mirror and you're like, who am I? And it kind of ebbs and it wanes. But I will say, I feel like OnlyFans has helped it, because every time I feel like I'm getting into a rut where I'm like, man, I don't like the way that I'm looking right now, I can kind of go back to my OnlyFans. I can literally look at the photos that I've done. I can look at, you know, how much people support me and, you know, say nice things to me and think that I'm beautiful. And it kind of helps remove me from the feeling. And it's like, it's not saying that I am ugly. It's like saying, okay, I feel ugly at this moment in time, but there are also moments in time where I feel like God's gift to the planet and nobody can touch me. And both of those things can be true at the same time. You don't have to be a full-time baddie, you know?
I feel that.
Yes.
Only bad when I need to be.
Oh, I think I saw you post something like that. Didn't you post something exactly. about like, I'm attractive when I want to be or something?
I am a freelance baddie. I don't know exactly which Twitter I stole that from. But I'm an amalgamation of random quotes and memes that I've acquired throughout my 25 years of living. And that's one of them in my bank, that I'm a freelance baddie.
Hey.
There's nothing wrong with that sometimes. You just got to be like, I can get cute when I need to. But right now I'm playing Final Fantasy. So I've got on a dirty t-shirt and some pajama pants. And that's and what
I
you get.
I'm mad at it. It's still bad. It's still bad.
It's still bad. That's what you got to tell yourself. Positive self-talk. Very important.
Yes.
Okay, so I don't know if you've listened before, but we like to play a game with our guests. It was like too soon or too late.
Okay.
So we're going to give you a couple topics, and we're going to give you a couple moments to decide if you think it's something that's too soon to be talking about. Maybe it's a little taboo. We should wait on it. Or if it's too late, you know, bye, done, over, dead, not worth our time. We're not talking about this.
If it's something that is worth talking about and not too late, is there a middle ground option?
Yes, we actually discovered that last episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just right, I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just right. Okay. Too soon, too late, or just right.
Or the perfect time.
Yeah, I think it was like perfect time or something like that. I can't remember. I have to go back and look at it. But
the time is right. I don't know.
The time is right. I like that too.
Sweet. The first one I have for you is, I know recently they were talking about introducing a Superman of color. And do you think it is too soon or too late to be having that conversation and changing like iconic heroes like that?
I think it's too late, honestly. Mm-hmm. I feel like there have been Black superheroes around just as long as these other superheroes. They just didn't take off because I guess they weren't relatable enough. And even though people of color have had to practice their entire life being able to sort of like project themselves onto white bodies in order to find like a similarity, because there wasn't that representation there, that street studies have proven just doesn't get crossed the same way when the character is of color for white audiences. They don't feel the same need to necessarily identify with that character.
Right.
And so I think it's too late to rehash the same character again and again and try to make them, oh, it's Superman. He's still relatable. Don't worry. We're just, you know, he's Black. Oh, his spirit's okay. Like, no, mm-hmm. just give me more Wakandans, you know, give me more characters that I don't know about yet.
Right. Speaking of that, the second question is it too soon or too late to discuss how to move forward with a Black Panther franchise?
Honestly, I think it's just right. And that might be unpopular. I know a lot of people feel like that, you know, to honor Chadwick Boseman, we need to just like nix the Black Panther as is. But I don't think the creator of Black Panther nor Chadwick Boseman himself would want that. And right. my opinion comes from what I feel they brought to the world and what they would want and me wanting to continue that legacy. And let Lindsay to do it.
Exactly. That's what happened in the comics.
Let her be Black Panther. And it's like, I understand if you're not ready to make the next movie we have right now about Latita becoming Black Panther. And if you need to make just like a couple of M'Baku backstory movies first in between, that's fine. Take your time. I love seeing Wakanda and the other people in there. You can even give me some side characters to give me background of while we try to maybe progress the timeline a little bit more in the background. That's totally fine with me. But do I think we need to just cast another Black Panther? No. Do I think that we need to just not have one? Definitely not.
That's what I agree with, because I mean, didn't they had a multitude of like comic runs where she actually did take on the mantle of Black Panther, so it makes sense to you know, move forward in that direction. Our last question, our last of our easy questions.
Oh, well, last of the easy ones. Ooh.
Even though, I mean, we do have a hot seat question, but it's more funny than anything.
Okay, I'm about to say study.
Is it too? We're still in Wakanda, Lord.
Okay.
Is it too soon or too late for the rumored solo Storm film?
Ooh, I would say I don't think that that's too late. It's somewhere between just right and too late. But I think the big deciding factor is the casting. I want to know who they want to play, who they want to play. And that's really going to be whether it makes or breaks for me. Because, I mean, comic book movies are big right now. Have we had, you know, Storm in multiple movies before? Yes. Have we had one about just her? No. But have movies that are just supposed to be about a woman kind of been snubbed just in terms of like production and funding at the same time? Yeah.
Didn't Wonder Woman kind of dispel some of those, you know, fallacies?
A little bit,
and stuff?
But I don't like Gal Gadot, so we don't talk about it.
Our last question is our hot seat question. You know, I think this one's like, I want to say this one's kind of lukewarm. It's more funny than anything.
Okay.
But is it too soon or too late to determine if Hinata is in fact Black?
So I have like, I don't know how you'll take it. Like I have news for everyone. It could be bad or good, depending on who you are and like where you come from. But basically, in a nutshell, she gon' be Black today.
Exactly. So, yes.
Like, to make a long story short, she gon' be Black today. She might also be Black tomorrow. I'll have to talk with her people, you know, we'll go back and forth. But I'm pretty sure she's got, like, at least the rest of the week booked out to be Black.
Yes.
I'm into it. And we're working on the look right now, and that will be going in a minute.
Yes, ma'am. I can't wait to see. Okay, but what's the song choice? What's the song choice we got?
I don't know yet. I have to find another song to mix with, like, you know, the video that was going out with, you know, the young ladies who were like, she's going to be Black today. So, you know, I got to figure out what I'm going to put with it. But that's a project that I am very excited to be doing in the near future.
Put like Brown Skin Girl with it by Beyonce.
Yeah,
that would be so good.
Thanks so much. Yeah. So real quick, let everybody know like where to follow you and like if you have anything, like any projects or anything coming up that you want people to know about.
Man, listen. So the best place that you could probably find me, the best place to find all my projects and what I'm doing, the thing I check literally every single day is OnlyFans. I am at Bunny Black. The bunny is with an I, not a Y. I am also on Twitter and TikTok. Those are It's Bunny Black. Somebody got to Bunny Black before me. No hard feelings. but I am also still under a few different other social medias as my more older moniker, which is Wreck-It Ronnie with underscores between the words. And then Ronnie is RONNIE. Those are definitely a lot more safe for work for the most part. So if you're wondering, like, is this social media I can check while I am doing my stuff at work? If it's Wreck-It Ronnie, you're probably good. If it's Bunny Black, maybe wait till you go to the break room.
You know, just check it after work.
Yeah. You know, while you're on your hour poop break.
There you go.
Just don't literally
me listening to the podcast. I'll just be like, I have to go to the bathroom, and I just listen to the whole podcast.
Yeah,
honestly, that's what we made it an hour for this reason. Watch it while you're on the pooper.
Right. And we wrapped up right at an hour. Thank you so much, Ronnie, for being a guest on our show. This has been so much fun. I can't wait for the episode to be out.
Me too. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you so much. I'm so glad we finally got to do something together.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
All right. Love you guys. All right.
Love you too. Right. Bye.
Bye. Hinata isn't black. Too soon. Hinata isn't black. Hinata isn't black. Hinata isn't black. She gonna be black today. She gonna be black today.
She gonna be black today. Oh my God. She gonna be black today. Hey. So that interview was amazing with Ronnie Bunny. And I think we all can agree the jury is still out on if Hinata is black or not. But we're going to keep moving forward.
No, she's going to be black today.
Exactly.
And tomorrow. And the day after.
She's going to be black every day when we feel like her being black.
I checked her calendar and it looked like she's going to be black all
Naruto,
month.
You picked a good one.
Oh, and real quick though. Yes. Also, justice for Ronnie Black. So if you followed her on TikTok before, her old page got deleted at 80K. Please go and follow her on TikTok.
Please follow. Because she puts out so much good content. Like, truly, I'd just be getting my life.
Yes.
Moving into our final topic of the evening. Like, Linda, do you have something that's too late?
Yes, I actually do. And I think this is going to be a good one. I think this episode was kind of politics heavy. So this one is very in that realm too. Do you think it is too late for bipartisan gun control reform?
It's never too late. You know the song. You know how iconic that song is. We're going to quote it. Exactly.
Here's the thing. I think it is too soon for bipartisan gun control because at this point, the Republicans are not going to come around to it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if the Democrats want to get some work done on gun control, they're going to have to do it on their own.
I agree. But I also feel like my reasoning for saying that it's not too late is that you're never too late to be on the right side of history. I feel like a lot of these issues that we've had with like Republican resistance, y'all late, y'all late. Y'all know people are dying. Why are you still, you know?
We've had like 3 mass shootings in the last week.
No, it's happened. Yeah. It's gross.
Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Virginia Beach.
And Colorado. So it's insane to me that Republicans are, I mean, they're not even focusing on gun control right now. I don't even think I've heard them say anything about it.
Yeah.
The biggest news that I think that the Republicans and Fox News have been covering is the kids at the border, because they're trying to make it seem like it was Biden or put it all on Biden. And you have Ted Cruz trying to pull stunts, getting on a boat and going down to Rio Grande, trying to find people crossing the border and walking through tall bushes and shit. Like, he looked like a fucking fool. They roasted him online again, and they need to get their priorities together. If they want to turn a blind eye to the fact that people are dying left and right because of gun laws in this country, that just means that the liberals and the Democrats are going to have to dismantle the filibuster and pass gun control.
It's disgusting because I feel like we need to be on the right side of history. And I know I say that a lot, but we have a crisis at this point. We have people who are being targeted, people who are dying on a regular basis at this point.
Yeah. Maybe we can do something federally if we can get past the filibuster, because, you know, Colorado, literally, they passed a law to ban these semi-automatic AR rifle, whatever the fuck it is. I don't know the name of guns because I'm not a gun person. I don't want a gun. I don't want to see a gun. I don't think anybody needs a gun. But they had a law in place and they fought it. And the rule got overturned literally 6 days before this man used the gun that was banned to kill how many ever people he killed in that grocery store. And that is disgusting.
It really is. You know what scares me, though? Like, myself included and other people that I've talked to who are more, quote unquote, liberal leaning, they're starting to feel like they need to get like weapons and guns to protect themselves. And yeah, it scares me because I've never really felt like that, you know, in previous years. But now I feel like maybe I need to put a little pistol in, you know, my little safe that's in my drag room in the back that nobody can get to, because I'm nervous about the future.
And that's the thing, you know, I jokingly say this, but either the white supremacists are going to have to get checked and put in line and they're going to fall back, or they're going to keep pushing and we're going to end up in the Civil War number two.
I feel like you and myself are very left leaning, but we try to have a, you know, a sense of reason to everything that we do. We have those ideals, but we want to make sure they're not like alienating everyone. But you hear those things where people end up going so left that they get their guns back.
Yes.
And I'm just like, girl, am I there yet? I just want to protect people. And I'm just like, how do I protect them when, you know, you're faced with a fucking AK-47? I'm just like, so I don't know. I don't know. Obviously, I'm not going to go out. Malia's not going to be doing her next number with, you know, 12 guns. But it is something that it is something that has crossed my mind. Like, do I need to protect myself?
Right.
You know, in a more militant fashion.
I mean, you go so far left, you're going to become Trigun. You know
exactly
what I'm saying?
Exactly. Exactly. Bayonetta in this bitch.
Okay, you're trying to be nice as hell. Next thing you know, your arm is about to take out a whole city.
Right.
So I really, really do hope that we don't end up in a civil war. But if we do, I will be on the entertainment team supporting the troops by keeping them entertained.
Just for clarification, Too Soon does not support gun violence. We do not support any type of violence, but it's hard out here in these streets.
It is. And it's hard for me too, because I mean, like, we both, I think we do both try to be reasonable, but sometimes I just want to be a liberal elitist, you know? Sometimes sometimes I want to be like, if you don't like it here, why don't you leave the country?
Thank you. We didn't ask nobody to bring us here. They'd be like, go back to Africa. Bitch, I didn't want to come here from Africa.
But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it's not too late for bipartisan gun control. I think it's too late for bipartisan gun control. I think if they're going to get a pass, it's going to have to be the Democrats doing it on their own, and they're going to have to push that shit through and fuck them motherfucking Republicans.
Agreed. Whew. Okay, so on to local news.
Ooh.
Linda, did you hear you was featured recently?
I did. I even threw a little clip of my...
She gave you a shout-out, girl.
A local celebrity gave me a shout-out on their live, and I was so honored. I put it in my podcast. So if you heard last week's episode, then the opening was of a queen. I can't remember. Is it the snake?
Girl, I'm not doing all that. I do have a relationship with this young queen. I just think that she has a lot of opinions that aren't... How do you say this nicely?
You're right. She has a lot of opinions.
She has a lot of opinions, but I just think that, you know, I think it's hard for you to speak on certain things in a community standpoint when you weren't here to see the abuse that happened. And I'm referring to... I know me and her have had interactions before, and I do respect her, but, you know, she came for my sister, and I think it's something that needs to be addressed.
I think it's too late, honey. Or maybe it's even too soon. I don't know. I don't know the girl. I've never seen her in person. I've never seen her perform. I didn't even know they did drag until maybe...
That.
I didn't know that until last August or something. So the only reason I was name dropped by this young local celebrity on their live, because I made a post about, and all I did was make an observation. You know, I was curious as to why people were going there supporting that bar when the owner is a known racist. It had nothing to do with any of the drag queens who perform there. It had nothing to do with the staff who works there. Because one, I really don't know any of the staff. I know, I think, one bartender there. And, you know, I'm not going to knock anybody for making their money, but it does make me, it is kind of questionable. And when I saw that were feeling some sort of way because they perform there, have shows there, or whatever the case may be. I think the shoe fit, but it wasn't for them. It wasn't, they just happened to have the same size as Cinderella.
I just think there was a misunderstanding in the sense of, I think the thought that you were in some way, shape, or form trying to shade them because they were coming up in the scene. And myself being, you know, we've been doing this for a long time. I applaud all of the new girls that are coming in. I never want to silence the new girls. I just want them to know the history of the scene that they're coming into. And if anybody doesn't know the history of Lacage, I have been personally discriminated against at Lacage. I've been told that I look like a gang member. I've been told that I can't walk into the venue wearing certain attire. I've been told a lot of different things that don't sit right with my spirit as a person of color, especially a Black man of color coming into an LGBT venue. And I don't want to take away anything from any of the entertainers that are working there. But what I want you to understand is that there is a history there of blatant racism from the top down. The only thing that we are trying to say is know your history, know where this feeling comes from, and let's have a conversation. Because I think for myself and you, we will never work there. It doesn't matter. They can offer me $500. I'm not working there. But I just want these girls to know that it's nothing about them personally. It's all about the history with that venue.
There are many other places you can be successful in Milwaukee. Nobody needs Lacage. And there is not a drag queen in Milwaukee who needs that bar, except for maybe one, maybe two. But everybody else, if there's a spot you want to perform, all you have to do is decide that that's where you're going to go. Reach out to the queens there, work your way in, do what you need to do. You don't have to perform at Lacage.
So just for reiteration, no one is trying to disparage the girls that are working at Lacage. We understand that you need to make your coin. The only point that we are trying to make as queens who have lived through the experience of dealing with Lacage's history of racism, we no longer want to support because we understand where they stand.
The way they treat Black people is a problem. And I've learned from other Black performers in this community how they used to get treated.
Mm-hmm.
So because I believe what they told me and their experiences, and I have my own experiences, that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough. And can't nobody tell me that they're better now based on the things that I've seen and other people in this community have seen.
Mm-hmm.
So the time is up, but you can miss me with it. And that's that on that.
The only thing I have to say to anyone that's working at Lacage, I respect you. I understand you as an entertainer. You need to get your coin where you can get your coin. I just would like to encourage those who may not know the history with Lacage to speak to someone who has experienced that racism and realize that we're not trying to tear anyone down. We just want you to know what you're getting into.
And that's on Mary Had a Little Lamb.
You know, that's on, you know, Malaya is Milwaukee's favorite cosplay queen.
And I second everything Malaya said. So what do you have coming up this week, Malaya? You got any gigs or anything?
Girl, I'm done this week. Girl, I told myself we're going to take a break for a couple months. We'll get back into drag later. Bitch, I can't dance in heels. I can't walk in heels. I'm still trying to figure this stuff out. Miss Pandorama done got me together.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even do a kick without falling down and wanting to cry. So we're taking a break this week, but you can catch me at This Is It on the 8th. I will be back at the Showdown hosted by Lola Rome at This Is It. And I will be hosting my first show at Club 5 on the 9th. So, you know, that Thursday, Friday, we're giving you that combo.
Is it going to be the Milwaukee Takeover or are you going in a new direction theme-wise? What's your plan?
We're moving in a new direction.
Okay, okay. I was scheduled to do some gigs that I just, I was kind of overworked and I wasn't feeling well. And I took a couple breaks and pulled out of a couple things just so I could kind of like take care of my physical health and my mental health and try to get some shit together. I have a lot of big life changes coming up soon and a lot of things happening, some cool things, some exciting things, but you guys will hear about that when I'm ready for you to hear about it. I do have some gigs lined up for April, but I'll let you guys know about them next week. And then I might even have some things happening in May. You know, I get my second dose of the vaccine and then I will be back out on these streets.
Well, aren't you hosting Drag Race?
Oh, yeah, I do. I do that. So I do host Drag Race at Dixon every third Friday. And since this season is so long, I forgot.
She's going to have 20 episodes.
I got like 20 episodes. We rotate out. And so I'll be at Dix this Friday as long as I get this episode out on time. I'll have it out on time. But yeah, no, I'll be at Dix this Friday at 7 o'clock for the new episode of Drag Race. If you like this podcast, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. I know for the last couple of weeks, it's just been me and Malaya, but Gemma will be back in a few weeks. She had to take a little step back because she's got a lot of things going on.
We love our sister.
She's amazing. She's talented. She's fun. She's funny. And she will be back. She's just taking a break so she can get some things in order. And she'll be back with us. Hopefully she'll be back with us in a couple weeks.
And if not, we'll find another cute white man who does drag. All right, girl. Let them know.
Yeah. Follow the dolls on IG. You can follow the podcast at Pod Too Soon on Twitter or Too Soon Pod on Instagram. You can follow me at Linda Joe. That's LENDAJO on Instagram or Twitter. Don't find me on Facebook because I don't add people I don't know. Unless you're a drag queen, then I might add you. We'll see. Ooh. If you want to support the pod, you can Venmo me at Linda Joe and just put a microphone in the comments so I know that it's for the pod. What about you, Malaya?
Girl, you can't find me nowhere. I'm joking. You can find me everywhere on social media at Malaya Marvel, MALAIYA Marvel, like superheroes. I'm on Facebook, I'm on TikTok, I'm on Venmo. That's the most important. You know, Twitter, Instagram, everywhere. So just follow a bitch.
Yes, please follow Malaya. She's so close to 2,000 followers on Instagram.
Please.
She's so close. So please go give the doll a follow.
I've been doing this shit for too long to be sitting here in the boonies with 1,900 followers. Yes. So
yeah, go follow my good gal Malaya. And if you're not following me, follow me too. Follow the pod and tell your friends about us. All right, talk to you later.
Love you. Love you.
And that's been another episode of
Soon. Girl, why we sound more like we just don't love each other at the end of the episode.
And first of all, okay, one, I gotta give credit to Bussy Queen for the Tamisha Iman story, because yes, that's where we got that info from. And I just realized that we kind of do Too Soon the same way Alaska and Willem do Hot Goss. And, you know, credit to them for, you know, giving the girls an idea. I think I subconsciously did it because I listened to that podcast a lot. We pay homage to the dolls.
So thank you, ladies.
Thank you. All right. Mwah. Bye, babes.
Mwah. Bye. Y'all ain't about to tell me who I can and can't cosplay. What? Y'all ain't about to tell me who I can and can't cosplay. She gonna be black today. She gonna be black today. She gonna be black today. Hinata isn't black. Hinata isn't black. Hinata isn't black. She gonna be black today. She gonna be black today. She gonna be black today.
You're listening to Too Soon Podcast.